know what I find interesting, and I'm curious about this, Cinder? How did Jeannie Ives' primary numbers affect your decision to come in the general election? I mean, there was a connection there, right?
Well, there's a connection in that I believe that the Republican Party has lost its way. I believe the Republican Party, half of the party approximately, sold it to Bruce Rauner several years ago. 30 pieces of silver is all it took, unfortunately. Jeannie saw that. She decided to run in the primary. Had she won in the primary, I most likely would not be running in the general under the newly branded Conservative Party name. So there's the connection. I think Jeannie and I both understand that this isn't just an election about it's not just a typical general election. This is an election for the heart and soul of Illinois. You know, I think most of us who consider ourselves conservatives believe that it's more than just about politics. It's about a way of life. It's about preserving the American way of life. And we don't feel, I don't think Jeannie felt that there was a voice for that way of life in the primary. And I didn't feel that there was a voice for that way of life in general. And that's what we're looking to fix.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about Republican Party losing its way. I mean, how do you define when what's wrong with the state of Illinois? How's that? That's as blunt as I can be, right?
And I was going to say, how long do we have? What's wrong with the state of Illinois?
Right.
First of all, let me say there's a lot right with the state of Illinois. I think I'm not one of these pessimists. I'm not one of these people who want to talk about how everything is southern. There's a lot right about Illinois. The people of Illinois are amazing. We have a tremendous economy, a very diverse economy, agriculture, obviously a third of the economy. Then we have a great big state with all sorts of opportunity across it. That being said, one of the things that's wrong with Illinois, probably the thing that I see that is the most wrong, is that we have this two-party system where it's people jockeying for position, people jockeying for power, and they're more worried about the next election than they are the next generation. You have Republicans and Democrats both who are trying to get to the top of each pyramid. Each party is like a pyramid. And you've got all these people trying to get to the top of their respective pyramids, but nobody is going to Springfield, going to the state capitol, trying to run the state well. They're just trying to win the next election. They're just trying to blame the other side. They're trying to blame people within their own party. And nobody is displaying any real leadership in trying to govern the state. And I guess that's one of the things that I believe I bring to the table, is that I'm not running under either major party brand, and I'm not going to go there to try to make the Republican Party stronger. I'm not going to go there to make the Democratic Party stronger. I'm going to go there to make the state stronger, to make the people, hopefully, of Illinois stronger through good, strong leadership and working together, working for the people, not the other way around.
Can I share a theory here with you? Because I think it dovetails into yours. Right, the Illinois exodus, and you can see a lot of different numbers, but we can agree at 130,000, depending on where you start counting. But we know that we're one of the top states when people are fleeing the state. Well, if a person today is not happy, very often the reason why is because they have no expectation for happiness in the future. Our current state of mind is derived by the prospect of the future happiness. Now, in the context that you just talked about it, if the people of Illinois don't think anybody's going to fix it, that expectation's ruined. They leave.
But I agree with you 110% on that. You are correct. Yes, sir.
All right. So
that's one of the things that we're attempting to do here. So a lot of folks think that if I don't win this gubernatorial race, that I'll just go back to the Senate. That's not the case. When I ran in 2010, which was the first time I ever ran for political office in my life, I said I'll serve no more than 10 years, 10 years max. And at the end of this term will be 8 years, and so I had to run for one or the other. I had to either run for the Senate or run for the governorship, and I decided to run for governor. So I'm making good on my first promise that I would serve no more than 10 years. It will be 8 years, and it would have been one option was not to run for anything, of course, and just go back to the private sector, pick up my life where I left off. But I do believe Illinois is worth fighting for. I believe that we, the people, you know, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and if we, the people, don't stand up and take this government back, if we don't stand up and take this back from the politicians, they're not going to hand it back to us. Because, again, trust me, take it from a guy. I've been in the back room with these guys, right, with both sides. And I can tell you from personal experience that I truly, in my heart of hearts, do not believe that either party cares very much about me or you or anybody else in Illinois. And that's, again, that's one of the reasons I put my name on the ballot. I'm going to give the people an opportunity, a chance to vote for something different. You know, maybe if we do something different, we'll get a different result. That'll be hopefully a better result. That's what I'm about. What you see is what you get. What you hear is what you get. If you don't like what you see and what you hear, you won't like what you get with me. But I'm just about trying to rebuild Illinois. And that's our motto, rebuilding Illinois together. Because I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone. Neither one of my opponents can do it alone. But if we all work together, if we all pull in the same direction, we might just get this thing done.
All right. Now, a lot of people, right, are chiming in on this, and it's pretty sensitive subject matter. Splitting the vote, all right? But you come in, conservative party, we saw the numbers and the effect that it had on the Rauner campaign in the primary. But with you being conservative, and then, I mean, with Rauner being in the race here, splitting that conservative vote or Republican vote would actually potentially lead to a worst-case scenario for both people of the Republican and conservative party. How do you deal with that aspect?
Let me ask you. So I'd love to talk to those people and ask them how it's working out for them having a Republican governor who signed House Bill 40, pay state-sanctioned abortion on demand, right? So you're paying.
Taxpayer-funded.
What would it be? Can you hear me?
Taxpayer-funded, yes.
Yeah, taxpayer-funded abortion. We have the list goes on and on, right? We have we're a sanctuary state because of this so-called Republican governor. The list, we could be here for the rest of the day talking about all the, he's been the most progressive governor the state of Illinois has ever had. Pat Quinn, on his most progressive liberal day, could not have done all the things that this governor has done. I don't even know why the Democrats are running anybody, because this guy has been so awesome for them. I have no clue why they even have a candidate on the ballot. So to those people who say, well, it's a worst-case scenario, folks, I got news for you. You're living in a worst-case scenario. People say their taxes are going to get higher. Your taxes got higher under this guy. And people say, here's the funny thing about the tax situation. I was there on the Senate floor. I voted no on the new tax increase. And the governor says he's not for it. He vetoed it. Let me tell you what really happened that day. We came in on a special session day. They voted to raise our taxes. Actually, one Republican, the fellow who sits to my right on the Senate floor, voted for it. They raised our taxes. The governor had 60 days. Think about this. 2 months. 60 days to sit on that piece of legislation before he had to sign it or veto it or do anything with it. He could have twisted arms. He could have sweet talked. He could have done whatever he wanted to do with people from both sides of the party to got them not to have overridden his veto.
Or he could have used the line-by-line veto powers, but he has pretty heavy-duty powers when it comes to gubernatorial exercise in the budgets in this state.
That's exactly right. But think about this. We sat there on the Senate floor for about 30 minutes while they walked the bill down to his office so he could veto it, and then they immediately, within an hour, they overrode the veto. Why didn't the governor sit on that veto? Why did he veto it in 30 minutes instead of waiting 60 days? It's because he was in on it. It's why he's spending every freaking dime today. He spent every dime of it. If he's such a conservative, why didn't he use his line item veto or his reduction veto or his amendatory veto to do something with this budget that was passed? He didn't. He spent every dime of the tax increase. He was in on it. So to all these people who talk about the worst-case scenario, folks, you've got the worst-case scenario.
So are you running against Pritzker, or are you running against Ron, or are you running – I mean, how do you – because I'm so used to this two-party system, and I wonder how you see it.
The parties love it.
Yes.
This two-party system. Here's what I'm doing. I'm running for the governorship of Illinois. I've never run against anybody. I'm running for the governorship of the state. And I'm equal. So here's the deal with Pritzker. People say, well, you're not talking about Pritzker that much. Well, heck no, I'm not talking about Pritzker that much. For number one, he's never served. He has no record. Number two, I'm against just about most of what he stands for. I am pro-labor. I'm pro-working person. I don't care whether you're union or non-union, public or private sector. blue collar, white collar. I'm for working people. And that's, again, that's another one of the things that the politicians have done. Both parties, the two-party system sold us out in the late 80s and early 90s with a very, very poorly negotiated NAFTA, and it continued. But both parties sold out to the big corporations two generations ago, and now we're paying the price.
You know, when we were talking about the budget a couple of moments ago, one of the things the governor did say was, I wish more of the budget, with the tax increase, of course, was to go to the backlog of bills. Today, this morning, when the office opened at the comptroller's office, $8,075,406,012.74.
And that doesn't even count the $6 billion that the governor borrowed a year ago to pay down. That right. number is actually closer to $15 billion. It's actually over $15 billion when you count the interest that we're going to be paying over the years on the $6 billion he borrowed to pay it down some last year. So really, that number is probably somewhere closer to $20 billion instead of that little under $9 billion. And how do you get rid of that? What I think we can kill two birds with one stone. Another issue that's facing Illinois is our unfunded pension liability.
Now, Senator, would you think people would be shocked to learn that 98 cents of every one of their dollars, 95% of their property taxes goes to pay pensions? You think they'd be surprised by that?
At this point, I don't know that people would be surprised by very much at all. Right, I don't now. And also, when you stop and think about on our property taxes, that money stays local. Right, that money actually stays local. That's not going to the state. But you're right; it's going. A significant portion of it is going to pay for those unfunded liabilities at the local levels.
Right,
but there's a way to fix it. And again, both parties lead you to believe there's not a way to fix it. There is a way to fix it. We are operating under what we call the 1995 pension ramp. And that 95 pension ramp was it wasn't a ramp at all. When you think of a ramp, you think of something like Evel Knievel rode up back in the 70s to take off and jump some Greyhound buses, right? You think of something with a gradual incline. What we have today is what they instituted in 95 is they gave themselves for about 5 to 10 years, they gave themselves some very low payment thresholds to make. They backloaded it. What we're living in is basically intentional. The politicians, the two-party system that existed in 1995, set us up for failure. Then they went on to skip payments and to borrow money, which brought on interest liability on down the road. What we do is we change the law. We have to make good. We have to. With the Constitution protects those pensions. We can make good on those pensions by essentially re-amortizing that debt. So what we do is it's like refinancing a house. We just extend that out. We say that we're going to continue to make payments every year. We're going to make a real ramp, a true ramp. That savings can be used to, every year. That will bring savings on the yearly payments. We can use that savings to pay down the backlog of bills, and make positive gains every year on the pension liability, thusly reducing the pension liability. This can be done. It can be solved. These are the kinds of solutions that do exist, but see, neither party want to solve the problems, because if they solve the problems, they won't have anything they don't think to run on in the next election. God forbid they would run on any accomplishments. They think they got to run on all the problems.
Right. You know what's interesting, though, is the worst part of what you're talking about when you call it the wall is if we don't do something and we continue on at the rate and this is not addressed, I think it's 2045, the balloon payment, for lack of a better word, the entire state budget would be required to deal with the pensions.
And you're right. And again, think about this. That's the way the ramp was drawn in 95. That we were set up for this failure. In 1995, it established a 50-year ramp. So that would be 2045. You're 100% right, brother.
All right.
And they set it up this way.
Yeah. And then didn't make the payments. But, you know, the idea that we buy, I think, borrow, was it $6 or $9 billion now and make that payment so that we can knock that rear end down by getting some money in the front. Is that an idea you support?
It's Say that again. You cut out. I apologize.
The idea that we borrow, you'll have to excuse me. I'm getting a little dyslexia here. Is either $6 or $9 billion. Borrow it now. Put it on that fund and stop that wall. Break that wall from 2045. The only way to do it is get in front of this bullet. Do you support that?
Yeah, I think that again, what we do is we extend that ramp out. It's akin to refinancing the house is what it boils down to. We extend that ramp out to 2055 or 2060. We make the payments every year on time, but by extending that wall, we actually reduce the payments every year. We save a few billion dollars every year, and we put that few billion dollars every year towards the backlog of bills, the general backlog of bills. So in about 3 years, we get the backlog of bills paid down, and so that's why I'm committing. If by the end of my third year, if I don't have the backlog of bills paid down to a 30-day cycle, we'll have everything down to a normal 30-day cycle, I won't run for re-election. I won't ask the people to even vote for me. Right. And I also want to pass a law that says that any legislator who votes to skip a pension payment and any governor who signs a bill to skip any pension payment can never run for public office again in their state office in Illinois.
Right.
Because that's the problem, is we've had too many politicians of the past taking these pension holidays, and that's what's caused the problem.
Right, we piled on. Hey, we're running out of time, and I've taken a lot more of your time than I originally told you I would, and I'm so sorry to abuse your goodwill, but I got one final question for you. And that is, recently I was reading an article about the transportation dollars that are being used in and around, I should say, around the projected Obama library location in Chicago. I know there's some other problems with that issue, and you're saying no to that. And it was a pretty substantial, was it $200 million?
Just a little under $200 million, just right at a fifth of a billion dollars. Yes, sir. So basically, in the 50th District, the nine counties in West Central Illinois that I represent, and all over downstate Illinois, this exists. But right in my district, I know there are several bridges that have been closed for years with no reopening date on the horizon. There are roads that have been closed because of those bridge closings. I have constituents, and again, I know these folks exist all over the state, especially in downstate and rural areas. I've got constituents who used to drive 20 minutes to work, and now they drive an hour to work. I have constituents who used to drive 40 minutes for dialysis, and now they have to drive 2 hours for dialysis. They used to drive a half an hour for chemotherapy. Now they drive an hour and a half. So you're telling me that we're going to send a fifth of $1 billion to Chicago to put in a new clover leaf for the Obama Library while we got constituents down here on roads that have existed for years that we're not maintaining? That's BS, man, and you and I both know it, and I think the listeners know it, and everybody knows it. And then furthermore, now the Obama Library says it's not even going to break ground this year, so that money's just sitting there. It's just sitting there, and therein lies another problem. We have billions of dollars sitting in funds not being used, nobody managing them, not being utilized for the purposes that they were initially allocated for. But yes, sir, we need to bring those dollars back out of Chicago, bring them back to downstate where they belong. And I will make sure when we get a downstate governor, we'll get downstate taken care of. But until we get a downstate governor, it's not going to happen.